Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit zurich.ie to find out more.
The government continues to weigh up the easing of restrictions and the reopening of society ahead of the announcement on Thursday, and it is a much-awaited announcement. Zoos, wildlife parks, golf, tennis and underage children's training recommends yesterday, but it remains to be seen what might come in Thursday's announcement. Separately, and in a surprise move, you'd have to say, the Fine Gael TD Owen Murphy, a former minister, announced he was resigning his seat in Dublin Bay South earlier this morning. I'm joined now by Patrick O'Donovan, who's a Minister of State with responsibility for public works and a Fine Gael TD for Limerick. Minister, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks very much.
We might talk about your colleague, your former colleague now, Owen Murphy's resignation in just a moment. Can we talk about the big announcement on Thursday, the reopening of society, or the roadmap to it anyway? We were discussing the closure of JWT, Joe Walsh Tours, at the start of the programme. And it's just another business gone by the wayside. Couldn't struggle with the weight of the pandemic and the lockdown much longer. We've seen Carphone Warehouse and the loss of 500 jobs or so last week or so. Now, will the plan to be announced on Thursday give hope to businesses up and down the country that are hanging on by their fingertips, or will it be too little too late for many of them, I wonder?
Well, I think the important thing to find out is that the scheme up to now, and at the outset, you know, I want to recognise the fact that there's a lot of people listening to this who work for Joe Walsh who are coming to terms with the fact that this evening they're facing the prospect of having lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. And as well as that, I know that having gone on some of the trips myself that Joe Walsh would have organised previously, they're an integral part of an awful lot of communities around the country. So a lot of people will have been familiar with the professionalism that company organised holidays and tours and trips for many years. But it needs to be recognised as well that from the very start of this pandemic, there's a lot of businesses that have had their doors closed, but effectively opened, if you know what I mean, by virtue of the interventions that the government have made, whether it is the temporary wage subsidy scheme, the pandemic payment, or the rates waivers that have been introduced for the local authorities. So the government have essentially kept an awful lot of businesses either in cold storage or open since the very start of this pandemic, and have pumped cash directly into an awful lot of businesses right from the very start.
Yeah, but I wonder, I mean, we have had, according to some in the tourism and travel industry, the most rigid, stringent lockdown right across Europe. And an awful lot of those people are saying we need more help, or else we'll have more Joe Walsh Tours companies going by the wayside and quite soon. And people are saying we need, Pat Dawson, for example, of the ITAA, he said we need Chris and Pop payments to be extended to the end of the year, otherwise we will have more closures.
Yeah, and I think the Minister for Finance, Pascal Donoghue, who has from the very start said, you know, that there's not going to be a cliff face for any of the payments that the government have introduced from the start. And we've always made sure that any time there has been an extended lockdown or there has been a situation where there has been a rolling set of dates being put out into the future, that the CRIS payments or any of the additional payments have gone out into the future with it.
So CRIS and POP payments will remain as they are until the end of 2021?
The government will provide, and has always provided, certainty in relation to business payments. I think you can take that as a given.
But hang on, will they remain as they are? Because businesses are under pressure. Well, let me read you one text, and you'll appreciate this. I know you've been getting questions from business in your own constituency, but yeah. A texter says, we have a small nightclub in Kildare. If the payments get pulled by the government, we won't survive. We are barely surviving now. And from talking to business people, what they mean when they say payments pulled is they want payments to remain at least at the same level.
And I think what businesses can be certain of is the government will provide certainty around when the next phase of the roadmap from Thursday onwards, And at each phase of the roadmap up to now, the government has also provided certainty in relation to the financials associated with this.
But that could mean, with all due respect to you, Minister, that you'd have diminished payments.
Well, I think you need to look at what the government has done up to now. And the government hasn't diminished things up to now. And I'm not preempting the government's decision. And I think you're going to, you know, I have to be fair. I'm not a member of cabinet. But if you look at what this government has done and the previous government, which acted in a caretaker capacity versus what other jurisdictions have done, this government has pumped money into the economy. And one of the things that we cannot be criticised for, the opposition will take shots at a variety of different things. But one of the things that, whether it is, you know, the commentariat or the opposition will take pot shots at it, is one thing that cannot be lended at us is the amount of cash that has been pumped into the economy by the government is something that we cannot be criticised for.
But Leo Varadkar, in fairness, before Christmas, was talking about tapering payments sometime in March or April, but when figures went up, obviously
Leo Varadkar was talking about that in the context of a forecast in relation to the virus, which didn't come through based on public health advice
at
the time.
It got absolutely worse, there's no question about it. This reopening plan that's to be announced on Thursday now, an awful lot of people are awaiting it with bated breath, but the theme is going to be outdoors. If you can do stuff at all, do it outdoors. But one of the main criticisms about that is that how can you do stuff outdoors for any protracted or extended period of time if you can't, and there's no way of saying this politely, relieve yourself? There are no facilities for the public in many tracts of the country, and you are the minister with responsibility for that, aren't you?
For what?
For allowing people to relieve themselves.
Well, I mean, you
run the OPW. I mean, an awful lot of OPW buildings could be opened up to people, couldn't they?
Well, they are, and from this week, we're opening up an awful lot of our attractions, but we're opening them up under the advice of the Chief Medical Officer and the Department of the Taoiseach. But most of what you're referring to actually comes under the responsibility of my colleague, the Minister for Local Government. So wherever we're allowed to open up, we're opening up. And if I could open them up faster, I gladly would.
Did you ask?
Absolutely. There's things that I would love to see opened up faster that I can't open up.
Like what? What did you ask for?
Well, I mean, I would love to be in a situation where I would have, outdoor construction in relation to some of our heritage sites, but I just can't do it because, you know, if there's a risk that the Chief Medical Officer has apportioned, the government has said we can't do it, then we can't do it. And I just have to abide by that the same as the rest of the construction sector. So I just have to wait as Minister for the OPW, and we have a lot of construction and heritage sites that we have to do. But we have a close relationship, for instance, with Dublin Zoo, which I have fostered this year, and Dublin Zoo is opened. But we have, for instance, the largest urban park in Europe, the Phoenix Park, which has remained open for all of the pandemic, as 1,750 acres. We are putting temporary tiling facilities in there this year, which we've never had, which is something that I've insisted on. So we are doing stuff this year that we've never done before as a result of COVID. And we'd like to do more, and we will do more.
And people want to do more as well. They've been stuck inside their 5K for so long now, now inside their county, and maybe 20K if it's near border. But will people be allowed to do some intercounty travel come May, do you
think? Well, I'd hope so. I mean, we did it last year, and again, I'm not a member of cabinet, so I'm speaking now as a constituency TD as opposed to a minister. I'd hope that I'd be able to see a situation where I'd be able to cross the border into County Kerry, or that I'd be able to cross the border, for instance, into County Clare or County Tipperary, and vice versa, and not feel that I'm breaking a rule or breaking a law. And this, you know, similarly, people that are vaccinated, I think that they should be in a situation where that they can see their in-laws or their outlaws across a county boundary. And I mean, we're not talking about the mass migration of hundreds of thousands of people. And for an awful lot of people, you know, going from Abbeyfeel in County Limerick to Listowel in County Kerry, you know, is not a massive movement of people. Mm-hmm. And I think common sense is an issue that I know that the Chief Medical Officer, this was looked at previously, and people said, you know, that the county boundary is the simplest and easiest thing for people
because people are scratching their heads, aren't they, Minister? They're wondering, why can't I visit my parents in Limerick or Cork, for example, if I live in Dublin, but I can go and visit people outside?
Well, the county rule is the easiest rule for people to follow, and that was why it was brought in. Okay. But I think now that we're at a situation where more and more people have been vaccinated and we have hospitalizations at a situation where it's at a low level and the R number is at a low level, we can hopefully start to see be some elements of those things being looked at. Okay. Those are the kind of things that I hope that we'd be able to see this week.
I know you're keen to talk about Owen Murphy and pay tribute to him possibly, but I want to ask you before that about Mass, because you've been vocal, haven't you, in the past about the need to ease restrictions in relation to Mass attendance and so on. I don't know if you saw the report in the Westmead Independent today of an incident that happened on Sunday at a church in Athlone, where Gardaí responded to a complaint about a gathering in Corpus Christi Church shortly after 10 a.m. It appears the Gardaí went into the church and broke up a Mass that was taking place. I mean, was that the right approach, I wonder?
Well, look, it's certainly regrettable, and it's not the kind of thing that you want to see happening. And if, you know, those kind of scenes can be avoided, well, then they should be avoided. And it's not the kind of thing that you want to see happening. The guards have a job to do, and it's an unfortunate position for the guards to be in as well, to be honest about it. And you don't want to be in a situation where you want to see the guards being criticised. You know, it's not an easy position for them to be in either. And it's not an easy position for the people that are in attendance to be in at the Mass. And you don't want to be seen to be people at Mass involved things to be criminalised or to be, you know, to have a situation where the guards are in a church. So the whole thing is just so regrettable.
Should the government have moved on this a little bit sooner, I wonder?
Well, look, I mean, you said it at the outset, you know my views on it. I would hope to see a situation that, as we know, get into a situation where we have the R number down and the number of hospitalisations is down and the more people are being vaccinated. It's not just Mass. It's gatherings of, you know, people regardless of their faith and regardless of their denomination and places of worship. We need to get to a situation where the exercise of spirituality and people's mental health, you know, and supports for people's mental health, and you know, Mass or religious celebration or gatherings for supports for people's mental health, and a lot of this is support for people's mental health.
Fairness,
has to be looked at.
You've been consistent on that for some time now. Now let me talk to you about Owen Murphy. Because it came as a surprise, I'd say, to many in Fine Gael, but certainly outside of Fine Gael and the public as well. And I think you were elected to the Dáil in 2011 for the first time, like Owen Murphy. But it leaves a big hole now. Is there, first of all, a bit of revisionism going on among Fine Gael top brass when they talk of Richard Bruton, for example, a huge contribution to politics? Leo Varadkar said history will record and listed so many achievements of Owen Murphy. If you listen to commentators and people in the opposition, they do not describe his time in housing, for example, in equal measure.
Well, first of all, you know, whatever about his time in housing, first of all, I admire the fact that he put his name on a ballot paper, and commentators are people who don't put their names on ballot papers is the first thing, and I admire anybody who puts their name on a ballot paper. It's a hugely brave thing to put your name out there, and be elected to Dáil Éireann is a massively successful thing for anybody. So, and Owen did it three times. So, you know, that's a hugely, he's made a big mark in Dublin South East, or Dublin Bay South, is it now? And you know, he's Owen Murphy is a very personable person, and I think anybody who knows him on a personal basis would know that he was hugely committed to his constituency, very interested in everything that went on there, and had a huge regard for the work that went on in his constituency, and first and foremost a constituency TD, and really rooted in doing a lot of very positive work in his local area.
And without doubt a very hard worker. But his departure now leaves a big hole, doesn't it?
It does.
And it's a big challenge for Fine Gael, or will it be, do you reckon, to hold on to that seat? Will Kate O'Connell be allowed to run, do you think?
Well, look, it's not a matter of anybody being allowed or not allowed to run. We're a democracy and we're a democratic organisation, and we're very fortunate as a party that we have always attracted very good talent and always attracted, you know, great talent, and that's a constituency for a long, long time. We've had people like Gareth Fitzgerald represented it, Francis Fitzgerald represented it, Owen represented it, Lucinda Creighton represented it, Kate O'Connell represented it. So we've
I wonder she didn't get on at times now with Leo Varadkar. Will the choir boys in Fine Gael allow Kate O'Connell to run in this by-election?
Well, you know, I wouldn't say that anybody in Dublin South East or Dublin Bay South would like to have it to be called a choir by. Ultimately, it will be up to the membership of Dublin South East or Dublin Bay South will determine who their candidate will be. And it's not for me or for you or for anybody else to judge or preempt who the membership of Dublin Bay South will determine.
Should there be a pact then between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, like there was for the recent Shannon election?
The membership of Dublin Bay South will decide after the Fine Gael National Executive decide how we will select a candidate, first and foremost, for Owen's replacement in a by-election. The one thing that, actually, ironically, he was the first person to moot how we would actually have an election situation in the event of a by-election or a referendum in a COVID-type situation.
Forget for a second. What I'm interested in is why Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil would run candidates in this election, in this by-election, when is there any difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil at all? And you said there was before the general election.
Well, no, you're,
but by God, you look and sound very much the same since the election.
But sure, wouldn't that be like me saying, why would there be a difference between RT and News Talk? I mean, the two totally separate different entities. So that's kind of a ridiculous question. We're two totally different entities, two totally different parties with two totally different agendas.
What's the difference?
Well, we're a party, a centre-right party, that are trying to take the country in a particular direction that's set out by the Fine Gael organisation and the Fine Gael party. And we believe that, that we've set out an agenda and a programme that has been developed with the membership and the organisation and our Oireachtas party. And we've hammered out a programme for government with our partners in Fianna Fáil and the Green Party. But we have a distinct identity.
How do you, though? Because I remember Leo Varadkar before the election saying putting Fianna Fáil back in government would be like putting John Delaney back in charge of the FAI. But what happened? You've put Fianna Fáil back in government. My question is, is there any difference for the people in this by-election voting? Is there any difference between Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil at all?
Well, what you're actually doing there is you're taking issue with what the electorate decided. So now you're actually taking issue with what the people voted for. The people voted for a three-way tie. They didn't give any party a clear mandate. But what they did is they gave the people that were elected to the Dáil a mandate to go away and form a government that wasn't probably preempted in advance by any of the great intelligentsia of the commentariat.
Okay.
So they gave the three parties, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Green Party, a mandate to form a coalition, none of which was identified in advance of the general election. And we formed a programme for government, which our three parties then... democratically voted for. So now the challenge that we have is to select a candidate, which the membership of Dublin Bay South will come forward with, I believe, the best candidate, and then we'll go forward and try and win that season.
You will fight Fianna Fáil and every other party on the beaches and Sandy Mountain, Ringsend and Donnybrook and so on. Look, it'll be an interesting one. It'll be a rumble in the jungle in Ranelagh without question. We'll leave it there for the moment, Minister Patrick O'Donovan of Fine Gael.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed.